Do you? Do you know who I am? Well, think before you say anything. Because, of course, you don't know the person I am. You don't know me. And yet, all kinds of people, when they find out I was born in Mexico, they act like I'm a criminal. I am not a criminal. I am not a criminal. I'm not here to steal money or take anyone's life for no reason. I am here to help. Help anyone who needs my help. That is why I was born. Whether that be in Mexico or the U.S., I was born to help. That is simply who I am. There are so many people dying of hunger, living on the streets with no help. And yet, people think I'm here so I can have a lot of kids and get food stamps without paying any taxes, or so I can get a check from the government and spend it on myself? Well, guess what? I'm not here to take advantage of you, the U.S. government, or anyone else. I am here to help those little kids that need toys to play with. I am here to put a smile on their face when they eat a good meal before they go to bed. I am here to push those parents to keep moving forward in life. But somehow, people still think I'm here so I can sell drugs. Or that I'm part of a gang because they have tattoos. Or that I'm out there stealing cars. Wait, is that why people turn on their alarm systems when they see me? I don't want to steal your car. And I don't have a fancy car. But it takes me to places, like my music classes, soccer games. It takes me to school. It takes me to the woods to take pictures of birds, trees, mountains. That is what I love. And I would love you to see that, but when I try to show people who I am, they still see a criminal. And it just gets so frustrated. If learning more about me, what I love, what I do, my music, my studies, my photographs, doesn't change the way people think about me, if they only see just the criminal, then they probably need to see a psychologist, which is fine with me because I'm working on my psychology degree. And I know college classes are expensive, and even more for undocumented students like me. And then I'm working my ass off on a low-paying job because that's all I can get. I know I face a lot of obstacles, and I know I can overcome them when I get my degree. And maybe I might be able to help those people see beyond their judgments. And maybe I might be able to help you or someone in your family. Because I was born to help. That is simply who I am.
Hola, buenas tardes. Muchas gracias for the introduction. I'm really excited to be here. I want to, just before I begin discussing these phenomenal monologues, just some points to think about. Quiero dar las gracias to Kristen. Here in ethnic studies, something that we always talk about in our classes, especially for the Euro-American students who are majors or minors and take our classes, is we talk about what it means to be an ally to people of color, and then in my classes in particular, I'm always calling out the men to see what it means to be a male ally to combat issues of rape culture, sexism, misogyny, homophobia, and things like that. Something that one of our wonderful, and I'm being facetious, presidential candidates seems to kind of revel in rape culture in particular. But so I say that as a way to say thank you for Kristen, because since I've known her, the way that she's become an ally to the Latino, Mexicano, Chicano community here in Boulder County is phenomenal. The way she's works with folks, and it provides a space for folks to share the feelings, ideas, and experiences that folks have. I'm very, very humbled by all of these powerful monologues. The monologue about the abuelita, I almost started kind of crying because it reminded me of my abuelitas and que en paz descansen los dos. And if it wasn't for one in particular, I definitely wouldn't have gone to school, that's for sure. I probably would have, you know, been in prison like most of the people I grew up with. But the love and, you know, belief and her shaking me, Gases, what are you doing with your life? You know, she's 4'10" anyway. She's a badass. Que en paz descanse. And then the other monologue, just talking about the daily lives, the triple standards that Mexicanas, Latinas face. It's played out in the political economy, if you look, even to this day, just men and women, period, in terms of earning power, it's still about 76 cents on the dollar, and that's not taking into account issues of race. If you take into account issues of immigrant status and race, Mexicanos are usually earning around 58 cents to 60 cents on the dollar for comparison to men for equally paid jobs and equally ranked jobs. One of the things that I think is really worth paying attention to is the equal pay initiatives. I find it heinous that in the 21st century, there's still these very stark inequities. The monologue that was currently shared speaks to a very, very deep and painful narrative and experience that most Mexicanos, especially men and women, face and deal with on a daily basis. And this particular narrative gains political office. It's now very highlighted because of our wonderful presidential candidate, but if you pay attention to mayoral races or pretty much the political cultural capital of the United States, there's a lot of folks who got elected into office and reelected into office because of this narrative that Mexicanos, Latinos are criminals and therefore they need to be contained, deported, and stopped. Hugo, I understand you came from Phoenix. I was a professor at Arizona State before I came here. I'm the kind of widow of the family, so I look very white skinned. But anyway, one of the things that was horrifying about Senate Bill 1070 and then also the public banning of ethnic studies was that some investigative journalists, I love investigative journalists, there needs to be more and they need to be better paid, kind of like teachers, but was that what we found was that buttressing all of this really heinous anti-immigrant legislation and very directly racist legislation was this desire to make Arizona a prison state, to have this huge influx of the GEO corporations, which houses most of the immigrant detention facilities, and the private prison industrial complex, which banks on bodies being housed using our tax dollars. So thank you.
Victor Galvan was born in Chihuahua, Mexico. He came to the U.S. as an eight-month-old baby. He was raised in Denver, and he's been a lifelong advocate for immigrant rights and justice. Challenged by his own immigration status, Victor has been a critical part of changing laws and policies across the state of Colorado. He was a key part of drafting and passing ASSET, A-S-S-E-T, in Colorado, and that ensures in-state tuition for undocumented students. And he works with the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition to stop deportation through community advocacy. His monologue is an excerpt from Moses Theater's Do You Know Who I Am production.
I know that when I get the chance, I'm gonna be a great man. I was born in Chihuahua, Chihuahua, Mexico. I was brought here when I was 8 months old. I don't know much about my dad's upbringing, but my mother
grew up poor.
the second youngest of seven children. With her family struggling to keep food on the table, she would always choose work over school, even though she loves school. Finally, at the tender age of nine, she made the adult decision to quit school to help support her family full time. So when she and my dad made the decision to bring us to the United States, it's because she wanted us to have the opportunity we truly never had. She truly never had. She knew that if we grew up in Mexico, we would end up dropping out of school and working in a factory for the rest of our lives if we were lucky. So we made a life here in Colorado. And even though we're in the land of opportunity, my mom was stuck. She's with a man who didn't love her or his family. After years of abuse and countless fights, my mom said, "Ya basta!" He kicked us out and disappeared from our lives. We moved in with my aunt, and my mother never batted an eyelash. She started selling burritos and tamales at bus stations, taking any job that she could to keep food on the table and clothes on our backs. And I got to go to school. The summer when I was transitioning from elementary to middle school, I helped my mom sell burritos every day. She would wake me up at 3 a.m. That's right, 3 a.m. I would cut aluminum foil, heat up the tortillas, and she would stuff, label, and wrap them. We were a two-person burrito factory. I remember always making the same stops. We'd go up Colfax from Federal all the way to Quincy. And on our way back, we'd take Park Avenue West to where the day laborers stood. One day, when we hadn't sold that many and had tons of burritos left, I asked my mom, "Why can't you get a real job like my friends' moms, a teacher or a secretary? I'm tired of selling burritos and being looked at like we're begging for money." And she said, "We do have real jobs. If you're asking why we don't have those jobs, it's because we can't. We're Mexican. We can't get jobs like everyone else. No tenemos papeles. We don't have papers. And you're gonna have to do the same to survive. No one's gonna give you a helping hand. That's why you need to work hard in school. I don't want this life for you. I want you to work hard, but with your mind. I don't want you to have to work with your hands. Like me." It was quiet the rest of the ride back home. I had told my mom that I wasn't proud of her. I felt like crap. The next day, she didn't wake me up to help her. But I felt her stop, pause at the door. And I got up anyways. And when I joined her in the kitchen, she just smiled. The summer after selling burritos, I tried even harder in school. I got the best grades that I could, and my mom told me never to miss an opportunity to try something I might love. So I did everything that caught my attention. I was in choir, theater, speech and debate, wrestling, weightlifting, Padres y Jóvenes Unidos, Parents and Youth United. I had tons of performances and competitions that my mother was too busy working to be able to attend. My junior year, when my friends were looking into colleges, I was afraid to even think about it. I saw scholarship form after scholarship form asking me for my Social Security number, and I knew I could never fill those out. Because I'm undocumented, I'm charged out-of-state tuition, 3 to 5 times more than in-state tuition for college. My only hope was a piece of legislation called tuition equity. I followed it closely for a month, but it quickly died in the Senate. But I did it. I got more and more involved with the tuition equity struggle, and as it was reintroduced in 2009, I was a senior in high school. Through Padres y Jóvenes Unidos, I learned to fight for what was mine. I am a Coloradan and an excelling student, and I deserve to go to school at the same rate as all the students who are gonna graduate with me. Unfortunately, it failed. 16-18 in the state senate. They had voted against me, and I couldn't go to college. Even with community college averaging $11,000 a year, we just didn't have the resources. High school graduation was approaching, and my mom was great. She even took me to order my cap and gown. She even bought me my class ring. She told me I was the very first person on her side of the family to ever graduate from high school. This was special. We got back into the car to head back home. She couldn't stop staring at me the whole way there. She would call me mi universitario, my college boy. All of a sudden, it all changed. She said, son, even though you can't go to college, I'm still so proud of you for graduating from high school. This is special. And I was so angry. I knew that she had been talking to my older brother, who laid out the cruel reality for her. I said, no. If it takes us 8, 10 years to graduate from college, then that's how we're gonna do it. One day, you're gonna see me walk across that stage and receive my diploma. And I'm gonna hand it to you. You're gonna know that everything that we've been through was worth something. I continued looking for scholarships, but only found one for $500 from a private funder. Then, one day, out of the blue, my counselor, who knew I was undocumented, called so excited. She said, Victor, you got it. You got the Mayor and Commissioner's Youth Award for overcoming adversity. I had never applied for it. She told me that you had to be nominated, and she applied for me. It was one free year at the Community College of Denver. I was gonna go to college. I called my mom, and I told her. Graduation was finally here. And I knew that this was not gonna be the end. For so many people, this is just a transition. The rock of my life was there, my mother, my brothers, my entire family saw me graduate. The pain, the tears, the fear of being torn apart were all worth it. But before starting my first year at the Community College of Denver under the Mayor and Commissioner's Youth Award for Overcoming Adversity, I found out that I didn't qualify due to some oversight. Because I'm undocumented and not a resident of Colorado, I didn't qualify for the blah, 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 blah. I finished my first year of college anyway. Because being from such a strong family and community, they help support me. I continue my fight for education equity, and through the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, and through many of your efforts, the legislature finally passed ASSET, ensuring in-state tuition for all Colorado undocumented Americans. And I know now that college graduation for myself and many others is truly in sight. And I know that one day, I'm gonna hand my mother my diploma. And she's gonna know that every burrito she ever made in the middle of the night when she truly needed sleep, every table she's ever waited on, every toilet she's ever scrubbed, everything that she had to put up with from my father was worth it. I know that when I get the chance, I'm gonna be a great man. I am and will always be my mother's son.
Muchísimas gracias, Victor, for making real the struggles that young people in this country face and have faced. The fundamental, arguably racist irony is if you talk to most of the legislators who constantly, in their desire to speak to their hard on immigration constituencies, is that if you ask them, you know, what they think of the American dream, or that if people should be, you know, that famous quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, should people be judged by the color of their skin or their content of their character? One of the just overriding ironies, frustrations, pain, and trauma is that we see in the struggles for undocumented estudiantes, if we truly are believing this idea of a meritocracy, we're having the students that are just extremely hardworking, top of their class, valedictorians, the, what we call, ironically or kind of jokingly as professors and teachers, the pick-me students, you know, are constantly having their hands up and asking questions, and just students who really echa ganas, and because of these very, political stances, these ganas are literally blocked. And then the deeper irony that I always will stand on is that the United States is a country of immigrants that hates immigrants, at least certain kinds of immigrants, one. And then two, why aren't indigenous people ever brought into the conversation on immigration and identity and all of these things? That there's no indigenous voices anywhere in the kind of mainstream political media. You know, a really famous saying that we see in kind of Chicano, Mexicano cultures, that we didn't cross the border crossed us. And so the Southwest was originally Northern Mexico before the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. All of these supposed rights that are supposed to be guaranteed to Mexicanos, including language, culture, religion, and land, just like the way that indigenous tribes and nations in this continent, or in this country/continent, pretty much every single treaty the United States government has ever signed with any indigenous people, and in the case of Mexico, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, if you just do what we call contar frijoles, just count bean count, what did the native folks give and what did they get back? You'll see over and over and over again, the treaty rights were never, never acknowledged. And so just listening to Victor's story, if you feel the indignación, the outrage, the tristeza, and this guilt that he has for his mama, you know, just, you know, and his struggle to really become who he is and who he wants to be, just think about these deeper kind of ironies that this very anti-immigrant, specifically anti-Mexican immigrant, political discourse exists in the United States today. From a political economy perspective, there was a really famous, kind of cheesy yet famous movie called A Day Without a Mexican. You know, everyone just stopped working basically for a day. And pretty much lots of economic sectors of our society collapsed, literally, you know. So there's so many sectors of our economy that the labor, the hyper-exploited labor, the underpaid labor drive. I'll just end. One of the most enduring stereotypes about our communities that we're lazy, one of the most sought after things in Home Depot, actually in Phoenix and Santa Barbara when I lived there, was these little stone things for gardens of the Mexican, lazy Mexican on a cactus. First of all, you have to be super drunk or just tonto to lean on a cactus. I mean, who's gonna do that, A? And then B, if you look at folks who actually look at these things, like National Council of Raza faculty who actually track labor issues, Mexican families on average work 68 hours to 72 hours per week compared to other families in the United States. So, gracias.
That's Dr. Arturo Aldama. He is associate professor and associate chair in the Ethnic Studies Department at CU Boulder. And you're listening to a special broadcast here at KGNU Boulder, Denver. Earlier this month on October 8th, KGNU partnered with Modus Theatre for a very special event at the Dairy Centre for the Arts in Boulder, Sharing Our Stories, Mexican Immigrants in Life, Media and Myth. We're hearing a series of monologues followed by discussion on the issues raised in those monologues with Arturo Aldama. Will continue here at KGNU. Ana Casas was born in San Jerónimo, Fresnillo, Mexico. Her mother crossed the border with her and her two brothers when Ana was 11 years old. She's a recipient of DACA, that's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and she's currently working as a promotora for de Salud, a health worker, for the Programa Compañeras of El Centro Amistad in Boulder. And she's also Boulder Farmers Market SNAP coordinator. Her monologue is an excerpt from Moses Theater's Salsa Notoria performance.
I live through my parents' painful separation. I was betrayed by my partner, who I had given my heart, my body, my soul, my everything. I faced the despair of being an undocumented high school student with a lot of dreams and little chance of going to college. But for me, nothing has caused as much pain and desperation as the deportation of my brother. Nothing. I want to tell you about him, but I don't know how to begin. I wish I could show you my memories so you could get to know the sweet little boy that I know and love. Then maybe you would understand. Like how, in elementary school, he would save his allowance to buy my mom flowers. And when she used to work nights, he would wake her up in the afternoon with a sandwich he had made himself. There are so many things like this that make Luis the sweetest little boy I've ever known. I want to tell you his story, a story not many people have heard, of the undocumented students who give up, who lose their life. My brother, Luis Alberto Casas Ibarra, was brought to the United States when he was 6. He grew up in Boulder. Boulder was his home, the only home he knew. Told from the beginning he could do anything if he worked hard, he was an excellent elementary school boy, an honorable middle school student. And in high school, he started out good, but suddenly, he changed. He didn't want to go to school. He would lock himself up in his room, not wanting to eat, not wanting to come out. I was so afraid he would hurt himself. He started smoking weed and drinking, and he got caught. And what a perfect example of a double standard. A Mexican teenager smoking weed is a criminal. A white teenager, or even an adult, smoking weed, they're only passing the time. 1 week after turning 18, my brother called me scared and crying. The police had arrested him, and he had many charges and an immigration hold. The only thing that I could say to him was, Luis, sé fuerte, aguántate, y no llores. What happened to my brother? Well, besides the normal teenage craziness, he realized what it meant to be undocumented. Because he knew, we always knew, we just didn't know the implications that came with it. For us, it meant that no matter how hard you work in high school to get good grades and graduate, it is almost impossible to go to college. We knew because it happened to me. It meant getting treated unjustly by the justice system. We knew because he saw his white citizen friends getting pulled over and arrested for DUIs, but getting off with nothing but probation. Well, he got pulled over, arrested, given jail time, hundreds of community service hours, huge fines, and not for drinking and driving, but only for being undocumented and not having a driver's license. Because we saw our mother work so hard, endless hours, sometimes up to 3 jobs to give us a better life. And still, we got called illegal aliens and criminals, parasites. So yes, my brother made mistakes. He got involved with people who were stealing from houses. But he never went into any house. He didn't steal anything. And still, he got charged for it. And he was forced to plead guilty because the lawyer who was supposed to defend him didn't even bother. how stupid we were to believe that lawyer was going to help you. How stupid and ignorant we were to believe the system was just. And the worst part of it all is that the main reason he got deported was because he pleaded guilty to a marijuana possession charge in Boulder. It is so hard to talk to you about Luis because I'm afraid that most of you are thinking, hey, he committed a crime, tough luck. He deserves to be deported. We don't want more criminals in this country. But how many of you at the age of 18 made mistakes? Think about it. How many of your brothers, sisters, cousins, nephews, sons did something stupid and got in trouble with the law? How would you feel if for that crime they were sent away forever to a dangerous city in a country they didn't know, to lose everything and everyone they love? Does that crime equal a punishment? Tell me, is that justice? Is that justice? Why do they deport people without caring? Why are we criminals for fighting for a better future for our children? They would say that the crime is how you do it. Why don't you come here with permission? Well, the answer is simple. There's no way for poor people like us to come into this country with permission. If there were, thousands of people wouldn't have died trying to achieve a dream, trying to give their families a better life. The majority of people who cross the border of Mexico and the United States are hardworking people, people who do not give up, people who risk everything for the life of their families. Do you believe in destiny? Do you believe in fate? Our fate was to be born fighters. Our fate was to be born poor in a country where people have to suffer hunger. And no matter how hard we work, we stay hungry. Your fate was to be born in the United States. And maybe, to your advantage, your fate was to be born white. After spending 6 months locked in a cell, my brother was kicked out of this country, thrown into the streets of the city that was considered the most dangerous city in the world at that time, a city he had never been to, where he knew no one. Those were days of madness and frustration, days of feeling unable to breathe. Then I heard his voice on the phone saying he was okay. He was far away, but he was alive. He was sad, desperate, and lost, but he had not been kidnapped, raped, killed. He was alive. Luis, I am sorry. I am sorry that you're not with us. I am sorry I couldn't do anything to help you. I am sorry you had to go through all that when you had just turned 18. But I'm mostly sorry because I did not live with you. Luis, I am so sorry.
Muchas gracias for sharing that. Me da mucho just tristeza and de hecho como odio or just anger at hearing this story. I guess to just buttress this very real story in what we see, one of the most eye-opening texts I've ever read, even though I'm not a lawyer, but I am interested in critical legal stuff, was a book called Sentencing Reports by Race. And all it did was just look at juveniles, predominantly boys that were white, African-American, and Mexican, or Latino, and that were convicted and sentenced and convicted of the identical crimes. And what it showed over and over and over again was that Mexican and African-American boys were always given the maximum punishment, and more than likely, the quote-unquote white boys were usually given community service, misdemeanors, something went wrong. We're going to help you, you know, get back on a good course. And so very, very, very eye-opening. Another thing, if you're really wanting to take this to another level, all you have to do next time you're on your smartphone or computer, just type in the Geo Corporation in Aurora, Colorado, and you'll immediately see in the very home page the stock ticker. The private prison industrial complex has been the number one growth industry since the late 1980s, actually with the mandatory minimums under former President Clinton. But right now, it's even surged more in immigrant detention centers. Those of us who care about immigrant rights and issues, there's this phenomenal, just systemic denial of legal rights and due process when immigrants, in many cases, are falsely detained and detained without any real cause. Another huge issue, if you ever go down to the Aurora Detention Center, if you are a family member, they can also arrest you on site and question your document status, and perhaps you could also end up there. So a lot of folks are actually out there wanting people to just take letters, cards, messages of love, support, cariño, to their loved ones. If you listen to the past presidential debates, I was floored when Hillary Clinton said we need to end the private prison industrial complex because the economic incentive of this is beds. It isn't due process. It isn't actually respecting the rights of individuals. It's the more people in there, the more this makes, and the more you get back on your stock investments. And so, sorry for being real crass and economic, but it's just this story that you're hearing, these are the results of policies. So I hope, you know, as you think about these policies, you think about what it actually means and the pain for family members to actually live these double standards. And if you're a child, as this phenomenal testimonio states, that maybe has never been to Mexico, maybe doesn't really speak Spanish that well, maybe Spanglish like most of us speak, right? And then going back to Mexico and you're just kind of, you know, there, it's very, very traumatic. Another community where this is huge is the Salvadoran community. Kids who are suspected of being in gangs, the Mara gangs, are immediately deported with literally $20 bill and just left at the airport in the capital of San Salvador and just left to kind of fend for themselves. And they've been doing this pretty much since the 1990s, and they continue to today. And so part of, you know, this whole political discourse of criminalizing and dehumanizing a whole, literally millions, there's 60 plus million Latinos in the United States, almost 45 or 48 million of Mexican ancestry, is that it just allows these just abuses of power, and yet people just like, oh well, you know, or, you know, not really have any understanding, again, of what our tax dollars are doing. So, gracias, thank you.
And now for our final monologue. Elena Aranda was born in Guadalajara, Mexico. She moved to the United States 30 years ago, and she's the director and founder of the Compañeras Program and the annual Women's Summit. She's a community activist for women's well-being and their leadership. She's been lauded with numerous awards for her work in the community and was most recently awarded the Women Who Light the Community Award from the Boulder Chamber. Her dream is that we all have equal access to health and education. And this monologue is an excerpt from Moses Theatre's Salsa Lotería performance. The English translation is read by Kirsten Wilson.
Se han puesto a pensar en lo valiente que hay que ser para un día salir de casa y decirle adiós a su madre, padre, familiares y amigos.
Have you ever thought how courageous you have to be to one day pick up and leave home to say goodbye to your mother, father, family and friends?
¿Recuerdan esa emoción de dejarlo todo para venirse aquí a construir una vida nueva, venirse a lo desconocido?
Remember that feeling of giving up everything to come to an unknown country and create a new life?
Yo todavía tengo el recuerdo vivo de ese día. Me vine sin saber con qué sorpresas me iba a encontrar o con qué piedras me iba a tropezar. Yo también, como ustedes, me arriesgué. Y aquí estamos. Cruzamos la famosa frontera con permiso,
sin permiso,
con visa,
sin visa,
igual algunas mujeres incluso arriesgando su propia vida para venir en busca de sus sueños.
The memory of that day is still very alive in me. I came without knowing what surprises were in store or what rocks I'd trip over, but just like you, I risked it all, and here we are. We crossed the famous border in many different ways, with permission,
without permission,
with a visa,
without visa.
Some of us even risked our lives in search of our dreams.
Pero igual, ya estamos aquí. Y de alguna manera, todos hemos recibido experiencias similares de adaptación a este país, como hablar un nuevo idioma, convivir con otras culturas, buscar un buen salario, un buen trabajo con un buen salario, educarnos, seguir estudiando.
But one way or another, we are here. We've learned to speak another language, live within a different culture, find a decent job with a decent salary, better ourselves, and continue our education.
Algunas de nosotras pensábamos que un día íbamos a regresar. Y aquí estamos.
Some of us came with the idea that one day we would return, yet here we remain.
Otras ya no están tan seguras de regresar. Los hijos crecieron, y ellos se sienten ahora más de aquí que de allá.
Others aren't so sure they'll ever go back. The kids grew up here, and they feel more home here than they do there.
Otras sí desean regresar, pero sus familiares dependen del dinero que ellas les envían desde acá.
Some women want to return, but their families depend on them sending money back home.
Y para otras mujeres, sencillamente no tienen el privilegio de regresar. La falta de documento les corta las alas y con tristeza se resignan a ni siquiera ir a enterrar a sus muertos.
And some simply do not have the privilege to go back. If they have no papers, they can't return home. Instead, they struggle to reconcile themselves to the painful possibility of never seeing their loved ones again or even bury their dead.
A esas mujeres, mi más profunda admiración y respeto por seguir con sus vidas en este país y criar a sus hijos con el terrible fantasma de la separación.
To those women, I give my deepest respect and admiration for continuing their lives, going to work and raising their children while haunted by this unbearable separation.
Y en cuanto a mí, a pesar de haber vivido ya más de media vida en este país, tengo que reconocer que a pesar del tiempo y la distancia, todavía añoro mi casa, salir con mi familia, las fiestas, mi barrio, la gente, la comida de mi mamá. Todavía puedo oler el lomo adobado que ella hacía solo para Navidad o días festivos. Y estar de regreso en casa para ella, eso era un día festivo.
As for me, after having lived more than half of my life here, I have to recognize that even with distance and time, I miss my home. Being with my family, my neighbors, the parties, the people, my mom's cooking. I can still smell the seasoned pork loin that she would make only for Christmas and holidays or when I would return, which was always a celebration.
Siento como si hubiese cerrado la puerta de un pasado que ya no tiene regreso. A veces es como vivir en duelo, esta angustia de lo perdido y de no volver a compartir la cercanía de mis seres queridos. Y a veces, esta maldita soledad.
I feel like I've closed the door on a past that has no return, and at times it's like living in grief. It's the anguish over what's been lost, of not being able to touch the people I love. It's this damned loneliness.
Mi abuela, que vivió un tiempo en los Estados Unidos, decía que aunque la jaula fuera de oro, no deja de ser prisión.
My grandmother, who lived a couple of years in the United States, would say that a cage is still a cage, even when it's made of gold.
Cuando yo era niña, me contaba que en los Estados Unidos la gente era diferente, que vivía encerrada, que ella ni siquiera conoció a sus vecinos y que sí, aunque vivía en una casa más bonita, no valía la pena tanto encierro, tanta soledad.
She would tell me when I was a child how the people in the United States lived closed off. No one knew their neighbors, that even though you lived in a prettier house, it wasn't worth it, the isolation, the loneliness.
Y sin embargo yo, a pesar de las dificultades, sigo tratando de sentirme en casa, unida a mi familia y unida a mi comunidad. Y este proceso todavía es duro para mí, Pero tengo que reconocer que hay muchas mujeres que ni siquiera tienen un día de descanso, ni mucho menos para compartir en su comunidad. Y he sido testigo del esfuerzo y del trabajo duro de la gente, porque cuando les falta un papel para trabajar, es más seguro que las despidan, las corran sin ninguna protección ni de beneficio. Y a pesar de tener uno de los trabajos más duros en este país, ellas no dejan de trabajar por el pan de día. Y no se quejan, al contrario, se muestran agradecidas por la posibilidad de tener uno, dos o tres trabajos, porque es peor no tenerlo.
Yet here I am somehow, despite the difficulties, trying to feel at home, create family and community. This has not been easy for me. And yet many women among us don't even get a day off work to rest, let alone time to build community. I have witnessed the struggle, hard work, and poverty of so many women because it's easy to exploit people who don't have work permits and fire them without any kind of benefit or protection. But these women, despite having some of the toughest, lowest paid jobs in the country, work tirelessly to ensure there is food on the table. And from these women, I hear no complaints, but the gratitude for simply having a job. Because, of course, it's much worse to have no job at all.
Dicen que lo que no nos mata nos hace fuertes. Y yo lo creo, porque yo también lo he sentido. Y la vida me ha dejado cicatrices visibles, invisibles, y a consecuencia de eso, viva, fortalecida y con ganas de vivir mejor.
They say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I believe it. I've lived it. Life has marked me with visible and invisible scars, and through them I have become stronger with a passionate conviction to live fully.
Como muchos de ustedes, yo también estoy construyendo aquí un presente digno de ser vivido. Porque así somos nosotras. Somos gente trabajadora. Somos gente que avanzamos a pesar de los obstáculos y a pesar de la nostalgia que nos asalta por no estar en nuestro país. Y aún así, seguimos caminando y dejando huella para las que vengan atrás.
Like many of you, I too have strived to create an existence of worth and dignity, because that is simply who we are. We are hard-working women who keep moving forward despite the obstacles, despite the nostalgia for our own home country that creeps up behind to catch us. We keep walking forward into the future, leaving a trail for other women to follow.
Qué suerte tiene este país de tenernos aquí. ¿A poco no? ¡Qué suerte tiene este país de tenernos aquí! Y este país sale ganando con nosotras. Somos gente valiosa, porque con nosotras también nos traemos costumbres, idioma, tradiciones, valores, sabores y ritmos de música y baile.
Así es, debemos sentirnos orgullosas, por favor.
Por supuesto. Y así es que debemos de sentirnos bien orgullosas de esto que nosotras somos, por aceptar nuestra realidad y transformarla, por atrevernos a seguir nuestros sueños, por criar y educar a nuestros hijos lo mejor que podemos, por la alegría de empezar un proyecto de vida cada día y por estar aquí hoy a pesar de todo.
How lucky this country is to have us. This country wins with us here. We come with cultures, traditions, customs, language, beliefs, talents, morals, flavors, rhythms of music and dance. We have a lot to be proud of because we accept our realities and transform them, because we dare to pursue our dreams, because we nurture and educate our children to the best of our abilities, and because of the joy we bring into all our efforts, and because we are here in this moment after all we've been through.
Lo que no nos mata nos hace fuertes. Somos valientes, imparables. Y compañeras y compañeros, esto es lo que somos nosotras y esto es lo que eres tú.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. We are courageous, unstoppable women. Compañera, this is who we are. This, my friend, is you.
Muchísimas gracias for sharing that and sharing the fuerza, the vitalidad. Just a quick couple things to think about. Some folks actually priced what if moms are actually paid for what they do, they'd be earning six figures, around $140,000 a year. Child psychologist, chauffeur, cook, nurse. I mean, you just think of all of these things. And so you add that, la lucha de ser mamá, en adición, to work dos, tres trabajos to be able to feed your kids. And so one of the things, you know, that we talk about in terms of kind of double standards, machismo, male privilege, and this is not only true in Latino communities, but all communities, unfortunately, is what we call the double shift. And so a lot of times, you know, the man will come home and be like, oh, tuve un día cansado, me duele mi lomo, or my back's hurting, you know. Crick the little cerveza, you know, get there, put the TV on. No, vieja, you know, where's my dinner, right? Well, the vieja, the mom, the wife, la compañera, hermana, all of these things also had a really hard day at work, but yet there's this expectation, cuando llega, all this, the second shift of work. And if that was paid for, it would be, again, a six-figure salary. So something to think about. La otra cosa to think about, and I really, me hizo sentir that fuerza, pretty much every single social movement in the Chicano-Mexicano community from basically from the 1850s till present, it's really the mujeres have been at the forefront of social movements, whether it's the East LA walkouts, the United Farm Workers Movement, Dolores Huerta, community-based organizations. If the mujeres aren't front and center and actually making things happen, things don't happen. And a lot of times, people kind of forget that or take it for granted. So muchas gracias for sharing this.
There were a couple of points that were brought up about the contribution that immigrants make to society, how they enrich from, you know, culture to the amount of work that's done. But there are absolute economic statistics about how much money immigrants, particularly undocumented immigrants, pay into the Social Security Fund and don't get a penny back because they don't have a Social Security number they're using. And so there's a huge amount of money that's being put into the economy that not a penny is coming back, and that is never discussed. When the immigration, you know, they're framed as moochers, you're coming to take our money. It's completely the opposite of that, actually.
Right. Yeah, that's really the fundamental question. And if you listen to all of this very horrific anti-immigrant or immigrant bashing, which again gets a lot of people elected, you just constantly see this narrative over again that, you know, immigrants, especially from the South, whether it's Mexico, Guatemala, Salvador, et cetera, are here and they're drain on the economy or stealing American jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Stealing American jobs, et cetera. So there's these predictable narratives you hear over, or these very sexist and racist narratives that women come here and then just become welfare mothers and so on and so forth. And so if you actually look at the reality and the statistics on it, you'll be, you know, really, really surprised. But again, it doesn't suit a lot of this political discourse that, again, will get people elected and keep people elected in office and keep them, quote unquote, popular with their constituents. So one of the statistics that's just, to me, absolutely mind-blowing is the collective purchasing power of the Latino community in the United States. The collective purchasing power is your ability to purchase goods and services. And so it's basically around $1 trillion, right? And, you know, again, there's a lot of people who really have almost this divine ideas of the free market economy and that, you know, supply and demand and so on and so forth. And I always think to myself, gosh, there's $1 trillion of collective purchasing power out there, and yet less than 1% of any kind of advertising dollars to sell goods and services to Latinos are actually kind of funded. So there's kind of a disconnect about, you know, economics and race. But to answer your question specifically, Maeve, the number one fact that just blows my mind is that immigrants in the United States today pay 22 times more than any kind of benefits they receive. 22 times. That's withheld Social Security, sales tax, property tax. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on and on. And yet you hear these narratives of that immigrants are kind of a drain on the economy. So that means that for $22 that you pay into the quote-unquote system, you're only getting a dollar back. So, and again, that's also part of the frustration. I think a lot of the folks who want to, you know, go to university and college is like, my parents pay taxes, sales taxes, property taxes, you know, all of these things are, you know, withheld, et cetera, and yet I can't benefit from in-state tuition, even though I've lived here kind of most of my life. So if you look at the actual legislation that's been blocked and the Supreme Court refused to hear it yet again, The very first act that, if it was actually approved, the legislation that President Obama did through executive order, was that once you apply and you're considered eligible, you're going to get a lot of money back in withheld taxes. So there, I mean, the U.S. government already knows there's literally billions and billions and billions of dollars that have been withheld by working families in the United States that they will never be able to reap the tax, any kind of tax benefits, unlike, I guess, the billionaires of this country.
That's Dr. Arturo Aldama, who's associate professor and assistant chair of the Ethnic Studies Department at CU Boulder. He spoke there at an event that was co-hosted by KGNU and Motus Theatre on Saturday, October 8th at the Dairy Centre for the Arts in Boulder. It was called Sharing Our Stories, Mexican Immigrants in Life, Media and Myth. It is 9:30. You are listening to Community Radio KGNU. Stay tuned. James is in for the Morning Sound Alternative.
Capitalism's been around for a few centuries. Maybe it's time for a change. On the next edition of Alternative Radio, hear David Harvey on the end of capitalism. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evening at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver.
Sometimes I have